This is It Is What It Is with Carlton Palmer on Proper Sport.
Yeah, welcome along to It Is What It Is with Carlton Palmer. My name's Darren Harper, and joining us, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, it is Carlton Palmer. Hi, Carlton.
Hi, good evening. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad.
It's good evening for me, but afternoon for you, right?
It is. Yeah, it is afternoon. Just so anybody doesn't know, whereabouts you're based now and what sort of things you do now, Carlton?
Well, I'm based in Shanghai. So Shanghai, we've got 8 hours time difference now. So the time here now would be 7:09.
Right.
So my wife's head of lower prep, so 3, 4, and 5 age groups. So that would be kids who were, when they say year 3 and 4, 5, you just had 4 years. So the 7, 8, 9 year old kids. She's head of lower prep here. We work for Wellington College Shanghai. So this is affiliated to Wellington College in Berkshire. So she does that. And I run all the academy programs at the school. So all the after school programs, sport programs, academic programs, and I run my football academy as well.
Well, that's not bad. If you've got your PE teacher and it's Carlton Palmer, that's not bad at all. I think I'd have a fantastic time at school then.
Well, this is what Wellington have done, which is fantastic, really. I mean, they've got me at the school. We've got Alex Milanowski, who was three-time Olympian swimmer. And we've got Sean Kareem, who was an ATP tennis player, top 60. And was coach for the Australian youngsters. So what they've tried to do is to bring in people of that calibre. It attracts people to come to the school, but it's good for the kids to be around people like us who know what it's like to be successful, to know what it entails to be successful, not just for sport. Because what it entails to be successful is the remedy for being successful in any walk of life is very, very simple. And everybody has the same 24 hours in the day. It's just whether they're prepared to put the work in, to put the discipline in, and to make the sacrifices. So to have people like us three have been there, seen it, and done it within our chosen careers, It's great for the kids.
There's no opportunities for a slightly chubby radio presenter then.
Your days are gone, mate.
Oh, damn it. I knew it would be. Let's talk some football, Carlton. Leeds United against Sheffield Wednesday. We sort of previewed it last week. It was probably a more important result for Sheffield Wednesday when you look at their current league position. But for Leeds United, an absolute sucker punch at the end there, losing to that last-minute goal.
Yeah, I mean, he's struggling a bit to find his best lineup and his best side, his best system. I don't think he really knows what to play at Leeds. I think he's rotated it so many times. I think he's using the system the rest of the season to have a look at what he's got and what perhaps he needs to do in the summer. But yeah, as you say, it was a massive result for Sheffield Wednesday. The manager there has got much the same problem. He needs to do a lot of reshuffling for next season to get Sheffield Wednesday in a position where they can challenge.
Leeds. I mean, it's a conundrum, isn't it? Because they are bottom of the form table now, and since they're on their form since Boxing Day. For Paul Heckenbottom, it's one win in 8. Games for him now, and I think he's looking to maybe go back to his old club Barnsley and maybe signing that Barnsley defender Andy Yiadom. So there's certainly some players that he's interested in, but the current situation at Leeds is dire.
Well, it is. Yeah, I mean, as I say, I don't know. You know, these managers take these jobs. You know, I can understand why Ekin Batum left Barnsley to go to Leeds United from a probably salary point of view. Leeds United is a massive club. But you have to look at the situation. You have to look at the chairman. You have to look at the players that are in there. And you have to be realistic when you take them job, those type of jobs. And under what circumstances? You know, I know the manager who's taking the Sheffield Wednesday job. He's taking them under circumstances that ties his hands. So whatever happens, he's going to be in a situation where he's going to be judged, but maybe judged unfairly. But that's his call, because the chairman wants to be involved. He wants to be involved in the players that come in. He wants to be involved when players are sold. So it's his decision when players are sold. And you can't run a football club like that. And especially, I mean, I don't mind. I've had two chairmen. I've worked for two chairmen who know the game of football. So if you work for a chairman, my chairman at Mansfield was Keith Haslam. His father was Harry Haslam, who was manager of Sheffield United and Luton. And, you know, my chairman knew the game. So I don't mind sitting down and having a conversation with the chairman about stuff. My chairman at Stockport County, Brendan Elwood, he was the one who found Luke Beckett and rang me up and told me to go and watch him. You know, so I don't mind, you know, if you've got a chairman who, but this guy at Sheffield Wednesday, I mean, he owns Sam West Salmon, doesn't he? I mean, what's he know about football? And then you put that in the hands of somebody else, like this agency that they're with. Well, all they're going to do is promote players within their agency. The managers come from within their agency. Carlos came from within their agency. And that's the people they're going to deal with. So it's a very difficult situation for the managers, but it's of their choice. But anybody of any sort, you know, of any ilk, wouldn't take those jobs. And there's numerous people who've turned down both the Sheffield Wednesday and the Leeds jobs, which are both massive jobs. But people, managers want to manage, and the chairman should leave them to manage.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's the European model how things have changed when you bring in a director of football, some people can work with that, some people can't. Just in your experience, obviously you've worked for different types of managers, different types of chairman over your career. Who was the best manager? Who was the best chairman to work for?
Well, chairman, what as me being a football player?
Yeah.
I never really got involved with the chairman of football clubs, to be honest with you. I signed for football clubs for the managers. Every time I went to a football club, I never signed for the club itself. I signed for the manager. So hence, Ron Atkinson is always going to be the top of my list for what he did for me. Not just in football, what he did for me as a person. I was a young lad when Ron got hold of me. And not just for football, in terms of everything, you know, he taught me an awful lot. But then I was supposed to go to Aston Villa, and Ron had gone to the World Cup, and Howard Wilkinson nicked in and got me. And I've got a great deal of respect for Howard Wilkinson. He's a very thoughtful man. He's a very meticulous man. And he brought on something more in me, out of my character, me as a person. And I've got on really well with Dave Jones when I went to Southampton. He's a different kind of manager. He's a softly. He's not a teacup thrower or a shouter. He knew what he brought in me, and he let me get on with what I needed to do. Basically, he let me run the dressing room, which is what I did do. And that's what he wanted me to do.
Interesting stuff. England-wise, we're going to come on to England now. There's a couple of games. England gets Netherlands in Holland, and then we've got Italy as a friendly at Wembley. An interesting squad. What were your thoughts on the squad when you saw that getting picked?
Well, I think Gareth's got a problem right now. You've got a Champions League. You've got people going for the Premier League title, the FA Cup and whatever. Clubs aren't going to really want to release the top players, and they don't want those players getting injured. And, you know, it's a difficult stage of the season for Gareth also, because he doesn't want those, you know, he wants to do some preparation for the World Cup, but he wants his players to be fit for starters. So I think what he's done, he's taken the opportunity to have a look at one or two players in situations whereby if he does pick up any injuries, he's got a backup plan. And that's what we've failed to do in the past. We've relied on, you know, oh, well, we've got Brian Robson or we've got David Beckham and we lose him, or a Wayne Rooney, and there's no real backup plan. And I think what Gareth's trying to do is see that he's got a plan B if his plan A gets altered at any time.
Yeah, it's a few debuts in there. I suppose this is what friendlies are for, aren't they? I mean, there's the uncapped quartet, Nick Pope, James Tarkowski, both Burnley, Alfie Mawson at Swansea, and the former Leeds United, now the mighty Bournemouth, Lewis Cook, are all included. I mean, Lewis Cook, I mean, he played fantastically well for England in the under-21s World Cup triumph. So there's we've got some fantastic youngsters coming through.
Oh, we have, but they've got to play. They've got to play in their first teams, you know, and they've got to go and play. There's no coincidence if you look at what happened last summer with the young lads going all the way up. You know, I think it was under-16s, under-17s, under-19s, under-21s. We went on. I think we won three of those tournaments and finished runners-up in a couple. So we've definitely got the talent. There's no question about that. You know, and I think what you've got to do, and what Gareth's done with his squad, is pick players. Okay, they're uncapped, but they're in form. That's how I got into the England squad. There was people who pulled out of the game. Graham Taylor phoned me up and said, my manager at the time, Trevor Francis, didn't want me to go and play. Graham Taylor phoned me and said, this is your opportunity. And I had to go and play and I had to take it. I then went on to play for the senior team for 6 years on after that. So, you know, this is an opportunity. And players who are banging form, that people will say, oh, well, he's not at Manchester United. He's not at... Well, hang on a minute. Burnley are what, 7th in the league, 8th in the league?
Yeah.
So why not? So the players who are playing in that side must be playing well. So, you know, you can't just look at the names that are there and there. Why take players to a World Cup who are struggling for form? You take the players who are playing well, give them a taste of international football, and you'll find out that what happens with them is a little bit of blissful ignorance, really. When they go in and play, you have more time on the ball, more space. It's more technical. And you get punished. That's the one thing at international level that I learned quite early on, that a mistake that you might make in the championship, you would get away with. A mistake that you might make in the Premier League that you might just get away with, but in international level, the one thing that happens if you're playing at centre-back and you take a step in the wrong way, it's a goal. Punished. So that's the thing, concentration levels and being able to transfer that onto the international stage.
Interestingly, the one position that does seem to be up for grabs is the position of goalkeeper. For so many years, we've always had an England's number one, and we've had, like, you know, a wealth of fantastic goalkeepers in the country. And there's almost, you know, David Seaman was always the first name on the list, but then, of course, you had Nigel Martin, who had fantastic backup. Now, of course, Joe Hart, one Premier League appearance for West Ham since November. Jack Butland seems to be vying to try and get in there as well. He started England's most recent qualifier against Lithuania. But then there's two others then, Everton's Jordan Pickford, Burnley's Nick Pope, also included in the squad. So clearly that number one jersey is absolutely up for grabs ahead of the World Cup.
Yeah, for sure it is. I mean, you know, I don't know what's really happened with Joe Hart. I mean, I thought he was a fantastic goalkeeper. You know, Pep clearly didn't fancy him because Pep didn't think he was good enough with the ball at his feet. Nah, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I understand the goalkeeper's got to use his feet, but for me, I'd rather them catch the ball, you know, and make saves. But that's the way the game's changed now. I remember Paul Robinson getting in the team at Leeds United against ahead of Nigel Martin. For me, Nigel Martin was by far the better goalkeeper, but Paul Robinson could kick the ball when the back pass rule changed from one end of the pitch to another. So it becomes an attacking option for you. Not to say that Paul Robinson wasn't a bad goalkeeper, because he wasn't. I'm just saying, you know, and I have to be careful here because both of them are my pals. But out of the two of them, I would still say Nigel Martin was the better goalkeeper. So that's how Joe Hart lost his place, and then he's, you know, then he struggled to play at West Ham. And you know, I would still say that experience-wise and everything, that Joe Hart would be my number one. But the problem is, if he's not playing games, how can you start him? I can't be hypocritical here. I think you've got to play a keeper that's playing regularly and playing banging form. So it's up for grabs, I think. There's three or four keepers who could stake a big claim for it. I think Butland would be in the passenger seat if Joe Hart is not deemed to be the one to lead the country. But I don't see how he can be if he's not playing first team football.
Yeah, that's the issue, isn't it? Really. I mean, they're saying that Gareth Southgate showed a bit of a ruthless streak by jettisoning Gary Cahill, so he's not in the squad. And you know, according to reports, the hopes of him going to Russia appear pretty bleak. And it was only a year ago he was captaining his country. But is this just, you know, Chelsea aren't really they're not in the Champions League anymore. They're still vying for the FA Cup, maybe. But do you think that's it's bad, maybe the end of the road for someone like Gary Cahill? Is Gareth Southgate now looking at elsewhere?
I don't know. I mean, I found that one amazing. And, you know, I think Gary's been a consistent performer for Chelsea for quite a few years. But Gareth's looking for something else, isn't he? He's looking for pace at the back. He wants to go either three centre-backs or four at the back, and he wants pace because he wants to squeeze up. And that has been the problem for England over the years. You know, with John Terry, I've always, you know, I'm not... You know, and I say this with the greatest respect, because how can you say this about a player who's won and achieved what he's done? He's had a fantastic career. Hats up to him. But you can't play high up the pitch with John Terry. You know, they've played whichever team he's won and he's won things with, they've played deep. So Gareth wants to play high up the park. And if you're going to do that, like Pep Guardiola's doing it, you've got to have people with pace. That's what's called Arsenal out. You know, Mertesacker's... You know, he can't play high up the park. When Germany tried to play, he doesn't play because he can't play. And when they, in the last World Cup, the one game that Hummels was suspended, they nearly went out because of it. So Gareth wants to play like Man City, high up, with two fullbacks bombing on, whether it's wing-backs or orthodox fullbacks. So you've got to have people with pace. And Gary's, you know, not blessed with great pace. I think he's a good defender, a really stout good defender. But he's in the ilk of John Terry a little bit. So maybe that's what Gareth's looking at with that kind of, you know, the players that he's selecting in the squad. He wants them to be able to have pace, but he also wants them to be able to be good on the ball.
Before we move off the World Cup, I noticed as well, VAR, video assistant referees, is going to be used at the World Cup for the first time. FIFA approving the technology for this year's tournament. You a fan, Carlton, of it being used in the World Cup?
No, I'm not a fan of it at all. Not a fan of it at all. I know crucial decisions like, you know, has it gone over the line? Yes, that can be, you know, crucial, especially at this level. One goal could make all the difference. But I think there's been far too much controversy with it since it's come in. It's caused more controversy. Part of football is the talking points. On a Saturday night, even as players, we go out and have a drink on a Saturday night. We talk about, was that penalty? Was that a goal? Was that offside? The supporters, it's exactly the same. It's never going to, no matter what they bring in, there is always going to be that little bit of doubt. I mean, as a commentator, I've been in studios and we've replayed, and still don't know. So I just think, you know, what happens for me is that, yes, in a one-off game, it could cost you. But over the course of the season, whoever wins the Football League, you know, Man City will win the league this season. There's no arguments about that they've been the best team. And that whoever will win the World Cup this summer, more than likely will be the best team, without a shadow of a doubt. You look at Holland a few years ago when the referee was poor in that game. The best team still won. The best team still won. So I think decisions come and they go against you, but ultimately, you know, the right team will win. So what we don't want to do is slowing the game down. Then there's controversy of whether the referee goes to the fourth official or goes across to us. And it's also taking up time and minutes.
Yeah, it's good. That's the problem, isn't it? Where it just takes up so much time, and no one in the crowd knows what the hell's going on, which I think is the frustrating thing as well. It's a bit of a shame.
It still leaves the same controversy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because, like you say, if you're going to do it, bring in the big screens then all around the grounds and let everybody see it and put it on the big screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Let the supporters see it.
Yeah, it makes sense, really. Elsewhere, I mean, Didier Deschamps, the France coach, he's been having a little pop at Manchester United, and he reckons Paul Pogba can't be happy being out of favour at Old Trafford, and saying that he's just not going to be a happy bunny there at the moment, and whether or not he should leave to further his career. He's only 25 years old, Paul Pogba. It seems like he's been around for a long, long time.
Well, he's not going to be happy not being in the side. But it's clear that Mourinho can't get the balance with him and Sanchez in the side. And he's brought Sanchez in, hasn't he, on an awful lot of money. And to be fair, if anybody's not done well, I mean, Pogba, for me, I know he's taken criticism from other areas, but I think he's done exceptionally well. And it's not his fault in the way that Mourinho set up the team. He plays a certain way. Sanchez has been poor since he's gone there. I like Sanchez. I think he's a fantastic footballer and a fantastic talent. But it's amazing how many times players, if you look at players who force moves or who do things underhand, it's amazing how many times karma comes back and strikes them. Torres, when he went to Liverpool, was never the same player, was it? You know? Sorry, when he went from Liverpool to Chelsea, was never the same player, was it, as he was at Liverpool? And so Sanchez hit the ground running. Pogba, see, the problem that Pogba's got is Josie likes to play with two older midfield players. Pogba's not an older midfield player, he's a box-to-box player. And you see, people are pigeonholing people into, oh, well, you protect the back four, Matic, you protect the back four and whatnot. You know, Pogba's one of those. You've got to let him, like the French national side do, is let him off the leash, let him go and play. That's how I used to play. And people were told to fill in where I left gaps. And the gaffer used to say to me, when you go, you make sure you hurt them. You know, and that's what should happen with Pogba. Let him go. He'll get 15, 16 goals a season. Nobody tracks him. He's going to cause problems.
Yeah, he certainly will go. But that's just not the way Mourinho sets it up, is it? He doesn't like sort of players that go out and do that. And you sort of get with what Mourinho's coming out with recently in the last few weeks, that he seems more under pressure now than he ever has done before. It's strange. I'm wondering how long Mourinho will be at Manchester United now.
No, I think he's under pressure because I think he's under pressure by his own standards. I don't think he's under pressure from the board. I think if you look at what he's done since he's come in there, he's already put silverware on the table and he's gotten back into the Champions League. He's done that, right, which is where they want to be. I think he's under pressure because he likes to go in within two seasons and win the league title. He's a million miles off Man City, and that's frustrating for him because he's looking at where he can get the extra points that he'll need next season to catch Man City. That's where he's looking at. And he knows that he's off that. And if he doesn't deliver the league title next season by his own standards, he'll be disappointed. So I don't think he's under pressure from the hierarchy. He's delivering what he's supposed to deliver, which is Champions League football. But he's some way off winning the league title. And I think that's what will be aggrieving Mourinho. He's a winner. I like Jose. I like the way that... You know, he understands the game as it is now, and the game as it is now is about results. That's as simple as it is. So he understands that. He sets his team out to get results, and that's what's been successful for him at every club he's been at. Within 2 or 3 years, he's delivered the league title. Question is whether he can do it next year, whether he can close that gap.
Just talking about some of the players that could be in and out, some interesting stuff in some of the gossip columns today. Luke Shaw, Manchester United. Mourinho's never been a fan of Luke Shaw. I think that's been pretty obvious. He feels manager Jose is freezing him out and might take his complaint to the executive vice chairman, Ed Woodward. So it looks like at the end of the road, really. When you're hearing things like that about Luke Shaw at Manchester United, you probably, that's the end of the road probably for him.
When a manager starts criticising you in the press, as he's doing, that's the end of the road. I think it's a, at the end of the day, I think a manager can criticise a player. I mean, within the four walls, in the dressing room, in his office, he can criticise a player. For me, any manager that came out and criticised me publicly like that, which is undermining the player and you know, diminishing him as a person, right? I wouldn't want to play for. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you have to carry yourself with a bit of dignity, and that's what I don't like about Josie sometimes. I mean, if the kid's not good enough and he's not doing what you have to do, you don't have to belittle him publicly. Just tell him you don't want him, get him out of the way and move him on. That's as simple as it is. But when managers want to, it's almost as if he's putting Luke Shaw in a position that he asks for a transfer to move, which he's going to do. He's not going to sit it out there. And then the problem is, if the manager needs him, he isn't going to give him 110%. It's crazy. I just really don't understand that. Why another human being would want to belittle another human being. Because if the player came out and criticised Jose Mourinho for what he's doing, let me tell you, with the serious repercussions.
Yeah, I think you're right. And one final piece of information that's just been coming out in the Gossip columns. Mo Salah, who has just like set the Premier League on fire this season, 28 Premier League goals so far. And looks like Liverpool might have a problem keeping another of their players. It was Suarez first, and then it was Coutinho. We know what happened with them. But now Barcelona, Paris Saint-Germain, Real Madrid, they all are interested in Mo Salah. Not surprisingly, because of the form he's been in this year, but the £200 million we're reckoning. It looks like Liverpool might lose another one of their crown jewels that they got.
Well, that's the problem that you're going to have in today's game. The managers are under pressure. So if somebody comes along and shows a great bit of form, then a manager's going to look and say, right, I'll take him for next season, because he could get what I need, which is going to keep me in a job. And that's the problem with football these days. And, you know, there's nothing you can do. The contracts that, you know, the agents that are involved now, all the agents are in with the owners. And so it's just, you know, you want the player to do well, but on the other hand, the player does well and you know you're going to lose the player. There's nothing you can do. Because once the player's head's turned, there's really nothing you can do. Money that's been offered, you know, when you're talking about, you know, I wouldn't have thought Salah's on more than 125 grand a week at Liverpool, and I bet he's been offered in terms of £300,000 already behind the scenes. So you've got a problem, major problem.
Yeah.
And it's sad to say, well, you've got to understand it. You've got to see it now, as football is a massive business. It's a big business. It's not, you know, it's a sport, but it's a big business. And this is the side of it I don't like. This is the side of it I don't like. You know, it's, you know, players should have ambition, should want to go and play at bigger clubs if bigger clubs come in. But if you sign a contract, then you should honour that contract. If you're not happy with what's going on, then you should go and speak to the chairman and say to the chairman, listen, chairman, a bit like Coutinho, he always wanted to go to Barcelona. Chairman, you know, can we come to some arrangement, blah, 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 give you another season, like Fergie did with Ronaldo when he went to Real Madrid. You give me your best for one season, we get the money for you so we can replace you. You know, it's, you know, you've seen what happened with the boy at Mahrez at Leicester, you know, and I'm sure, you know, clubs are going to come knocking again come the summer for him, you know. But for three or four games, Leicester lost him, didn't they? Three or four games.
Yeah, it's probably a wise move to try and get the best out of him for a year or so and then cash in. 200 million, everybody's got a price, haven't they, at the end of the day. Carlton, as always, a pleasure to chat, and we'll catch up with you at around the same time next week.
OK, thanks a lot. You take care.
This is It Is What It Is with Carlton Palmer on Proper Sport.